Hello everyone and welcome to the Staring Your Bike podcast. I'm your host Nigel Page, ex-pro downhill and four-cross rider, former World Cup and World Championships commentator and former team manager for the Chain Reaction Cycles Nuke Proof factory racing team. Unfortunately, I've just recently been made redundant after 16 years of running the team, so I've decided to start this podcast to drown my sorrows and have a bit of fun along the way. Biking has been my life for almost 50 years and I'm looking forward to sharing my experiences and knowledge and chatting to some of the amazing characters that I have met whilst doing the sport that we all love. I hope you enjoy and most importantly,
stay on your bike!
Right, on you go.
I don't know what I'm doing. Well, I need to look at that. Welcome to episode 1 of the Stay On Your Bike podcast. Today I'm joined here with my daughter Maya. This is our first podcast and we are completely winging it. So please bear with us. We promise it will get better as we do more podcasts.
Okay, Nigel, so why don't you tell everyone how you first got into bike riding?
Yeah, well, growing up as a kid, I lived on a normal housing estate in a little village called Rainford, which is in the northwest of England, about 13 miles from Liverpool. Obviously in our street there was kids of different ages, and a few of the older kids in the street had bikes, and I always just wanted a bike. So when I was about 2.5 years old, I think my mum and dad got me a little push bike. My dad used to push me up and down the street on that, and then eventually I took my stabilisers off because none of the other older kids had stabilisers, and that was me. I was off bombing it around the house, up and down the street, which progressed as we got a little bit older. We used to make ramps in the street with bricks and pieces of wood. I remember getting a little rally chipper off one of my cousins. It was kind of a hand-me-down bike. I think my dad repainted it, put new tyres on it and stuff. I love that little bike. I rode that pretty much every day. And then when I was about 4.5, I always wanted a motorbike. So for Christmas, just before I was 5, Father Christmas at the time brought me a little Italjet 50cc motorbike. Again, I thought that was brand new, but it turns out my dad had bought it second hand. My dad was like a really good engineer, so he'd done it all up, repainted it, again got new tyres on there. My mum had made new seat cover for it, and I thought it was a brand new motorbike. And I pretty much rode that every single day. And when I was going to school, I'd come home at lunchtime, ride the bike around the house, up and down the street. Didn't seem to matter back then if you were bombing up and down the street on a little motorbike. And at the weekends, my dad used to take me to some waste ground in the village, and we used to bomb around on our motorbikes. There was a few other kids in the village that had motorbikes at the time. And yeah, it was really great times. Then a couple of years on from there, I got a rally grifter. Basically, you either had a rally grifter or a rally chopper. I never really wanted the chopper, I always wanted the grifter. It looked a bit more meaner to me, a bit more like a motorbike, I guess, with knobbly tyres and mud guards. So I got a rally grifter for Christmas. I think I was about 8 years old, and I was so stoked when I got up on Christmas Day and received the grifter. So I went down the village to meet all my mates on Christmas Day like we used to do, and we'd go riding our bikes around the streets before we went in for Christmas dinner. Anyway, we was down the village and to all the kids turned up, and they had these bikes that I'd never seen before and literally fell in love with them straight away, and these bikes were called BMXs. I could not believe how cool they looked. I actually think one was a Torker and one was a Mongoose. Anyway, I went home for Christmas dinner, told my mum I'd just seen these bikes called BMXs, basically ranted on all through Christmas dinner about these BMXs after my mum had obviously just got me a grifter for Christmas. But that just changed my life. I wanted a BMX bike so bad. Anyway, I must have worn my mum down, and that summer holidays, my mum took me to a little bike shop in Wigan called Rogerson's, and she got me a BMX bike. It was a yellow Huffy Pro Thunder with aluminium yellow mag, kickback coaster brake, And that thing was so cool. I learned to wheelie on that bike. Used to wheelie up and down the street with my mate Will Booth. And we learned to wheelie. Obviously, we could do bigger jumps on those bikes. Used to go down the village and hang out with the older kids who had BMXs, and we'd have long jump contests and stuff like that. It was just brilliant times. Anyway, a couple of years later, we'd heard, you know, via the older kids that there was an actual BMX track in Wigan called Three Sisters. So I was asking my mum and dad, could I go to that BMX track? And my dad took me and one of my mates from school one day. I think we went on a Saturday, and we got there, and it turns out there was actually a BMX race there. So my dad just entered us in the race. So my first time on a BMX track was actually racing, and yeah, I absolutely loved it. Anyway, that Christmas coming up, we used to, obviously there was BMX magazines that were coming out now, so I used to go down to the paper shop, get my dad's paper and get one of the BMX magazines. There was American BMX magazines called BMX Plus, BMX Action, Bike, and there was also a UK magazine called BMX Weekly. So we used to get those magazines and look through all the amazing BMX bikes you could get in America. My mum took me down to Alan's BMX shop in Wigan. At the time, Alan was the importer for Robinson Bikes and Torker, and I went into it was kind of like an old warehouse then. My mum took me in, and the shop was upstairs, and downstairs was one of the team race bikes. I think it was Tony Holland's bike. It was a chrome Robinson with all blue and red parts on it. The Robinson logo was blue and red. And that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. Anyway, luckily, my mum was really kind. She let me go and speak to Alan upstairs, and I ordered a Robinson Expert, which I got that Christmas. And then I think in the January, my dad took me racing again at Three Sisters on that Robinson, and I got a second place trophy, which was amazing, and just absolutely loved it. Obviously, that Robinson bike was a race bike. It was way easier to race on. It was a lot lighter than my old bike. And from that day on, I raced BMX from I was 10 years old till I was 17, pretty much every weekend. In the summertime, we used to race three times a week, Wednesday night, Friday night, and then the weekend. And yeah, it was just some of the best times of my life. I met so many good friends from all around the country that I still know to this day. And yeah, I did pretty decent at BMX racing. I was number three in the Northwest one year, I think, when I was maybe 12. Raced regionals, local races, national level, went to a few races abroad. Started getting a lot faster when I was about 15, because I was always quite small for my age. I was always decent at starts and jumps and cornering, but just didn't have the raw horsepower that a lot of the bigger kids had. But when I got to 15, I sort of started getting a bit stronger, started making national finals then, and you know, got the odd podium. And at the time, I was racing 20-inch and cruiser, so quite a lot of racing. And then outside of racing, I basically rode my BMX bike every single day, whether it was just bombing it around the village, going up to the school, jumping off flights of steps, or making jumps in the woods. It was totally my life until I turned 17.
So what is it that made you stop racing, and what is it that you got up to when you were 17?
As I said, I raced BMX from when I was 10 till I was 17, pretty much every weekend. I rode my bike every single day, and I would never have changed that. I absolutely loved every day on my bike. Always wanted to go racing, just loved the whole race scene, hanging out with my mates, riding our bikes. It was just so fun. I absolutely loved it. And then towards the end of the 80s, this would have been about 1989, the race scene in the UK for BMX started to sort of peter off a little bit. I guess, you know, when you turn 17, a lot of kids learn to drive, get a car, meet girls, start going out and drinking and stuff, and some people kind of, you know, quit racing at that age. And that kind of happened to me, mainly I think because my friends started to stop racing. And as I say, a big part of it for me was the social aspect of riding and racing. obviously I loved the racing and the competition, but I also just liked hanging out with my mates. And so when some of my good mates stopped racing, it kind of became a bit less fun. And then obviously at that time I'd just left school. I'd got a job working for St Helens Council in an education finance office, which I absolutely hated. I passed my test and my dad got me a car, so I was going out in my car every day. That kind of took over riding my bike. So, you know, in the day I was working, and then at night we used to bomb around in our cars like lots of kids did at that age. I think BMX, the racing also started dying off because sort of computer consoles started coming in and kids were doing gaming rather than going out on the bikes. I think that was a big part of the downfall of BMX racing at that time. But we were just, you know, going out, drinking, driving the cars, being a bit reckless in the cars and whatever. Had a few crashes, as you do on your BMX bike. And then also at that time, the acid house rave scene hit the UK massively. And me and some of my friends from school started going out to the clubs and going to raves and stuff. And yeah, that took over for probably about 5 or 6 years. Basically, going to work in the week, driving our cars around at night, and going to big dance clubs and raves at the weekend. And again, that was super fun. Wouldn't change that again. You know, it was an amazing time. But we used to go to Ibiza in the summer, or Magaluf or whatever, for a 2 week holiday with the lads. I think the third time I was in Ibiza, it was about 1985. I just started to think, what am I doing here? I used to enjoy hiring mopeds out when I was on holiday, and that for me, that was as fun as anything else, just razzing around on mopeds, you know, back on two wheels. And I decided to come up when I got home from that holiday in 85. I said to my dad, I'm going to get a motocross bike and go motocross racing. That was something I always wanted to do as a kid and wasn't allowed to do that. So I thought, I'm going to give it a go. So my dad built me a trailer, stuck it on the back of the Nova, and off we went to a motocross race. I bought a secondhand KX125. As a kid, I used to always dream about owning a Kawasaki KX80. So I got a KX125, went racing, and actually did really well. The first race I did, I won one of the races. I think I got third overall. And then, yeah, that kind of took off like the BMX did as a kid. I sort of rode my motocross bike in the week after work, and went racing at the weekend. Managed to do pretty good at motocross racing. I moved up from the junior category into the senior category. Won three straight senior categories, and that sent me straight into the expert class, which was quite a big jump up. But yeah, first expert race, I got fifth place, I think. And so yeah, I was loving that. And then unfortunately, I had a crash at my next race and badly dislocated my shoulder. And so I was off work for a bit, and I had an old mountain bike in the garage that I sort of went on now and again. And I started riding that just to keep fit for when I got back motocross racing. And as it turned out, I met a guy at work who used to run the outdoor education side of things for the education department for St Helens Council that I work for. And we got chatting one day when he came into the office. And he explained that mountain biking had come into the Duke of Edinburgh Award, which he was running at the weekends. So I asked him a few questions about that, and he invited me along at the weekend to come and help out. So I dug the mountain bike out again. We went up to the Lake District camping with a load of teenage kids that were doing the Duke of Edinburgh Award. And yeah, I'd never properly done mountain biking, you know, in the mountains, and I absolutely loved that. I started working most weekends for the Duke of Edinburgh Award and just got riding my mountain bike a bit more and started to really enjoy that. And then later that year, I was getting really pissed off with working in the office. That outdoor education work I was doing at the weekends kind of made me realise that I definitely didn't want to work in an office for the rest of my life. And so I left my job. It was a bit scary at the time. I had, you know, a full-time job working for St Helens Council, but I decided to go off to do a Camp America that summer. This was in 1996. Yeah, went to America for, I think it was about 6 or 7 weeks. in North California, it was, where I was kind of working on a summer camp with a load of 8 to 10 year old kids, and it was super hard work. It was nothing that I'd ever done before. Basically, my mum did most stuff for me growing up as a kid, and it was a big eye opener on, you know, looking after yourself and looking after a load of young kids as well. But at the end of that camp, I went and did a mountain bike camp for some older kids, like I think they were 15, 16 year olds. We went to Yosemite Park, and the ride in there was phenomenal. Like the mountain biking we were doing, it was just such a good time. And they realized, you know, I was pretty good on the bike, so they invited me to come back the following summer and just do the mountain biking. So that was the plan. But when I came home from that camp, I decided to go and try and do a downhill race. One of my mates had told me there was a downhill race coming up. Funny story, earlier that year, my old Diamondback that I had that I used to always break on me, just before I left the office, we won the national lottery, which was new at the time. We had an office syndicate, like a lot of offices did back then, and we won, I think it was the one prize down from the top lottery win, and I ended up getting about $4,500, I think, which to me at the time was a huge amount of money. I went straight off to Leisure Lakes and bought a GT Zaskar with bullseye cranks and spec'd it out myself. And for the first time, I had a mountain bike that didn't break every time I did a jump on it. Anyway, when I got back from that working for Camp America, I went to this mountain bike race. I'd bought a GT frame, full suspension frame, when I was in the States because it was a lot cheaper. So I came home with that, swapped all the parts over from a GT Zaskar, and went and did a NAMS race, which Chris Whitfield's dad used to run. I managed to get first place in the seniors and the second fastest time overall. I think it was actually Ed Mosley, Tracy Mosley's brother, that was an elite racer at that time that won the race, and I wasn't far behind him. So I decided I was going to give downhilling a go for the following season. And so a friend of mine, Mike Alderson, that was actually met him working when I was working for the Duke of Edinburgh Award. He was one of the young guys on there. He was into his mountain biking, and we decided we'd give racing a go. So we used to go to Nanuk in North Wales every weekend. We'd load up my Corsa that I had at the time, put the bikes on the back. My dad had made us a bike rack, and we used to go there every single weekend, pushing our bikes up the hill and riding, probably doing 6 or 7 runs every Sunday. And that we did that all winter, and then we decided to enter the first national round of 97, which was actually here in Innalethan, where I now live, which is pretty crazy looking back. But I managed to win that race in the senior category, and from there I got a phone call from Ride On Bikes, guy Craig Robertson that owns Ride On Bikes. He remembered me from racing BMX as a kid. He was a few years older than me, and he offered me a deal to ride for the shop, and they'd provide me a bike and the kit to race for the rest of the season. And that was the start of my downhill racing career and my first ever sponsor. All the years I did BMX, you know, I never got sponsored for anything. My mum and dad always paid for everything, and rightly so, you know. I wasn't probably fast enough to be sponsored, but it was quite an eye-opener doing the mountain bike and someone ringing up and offering me a free bike, basically. So that helped out loads. I managed to sell my own bike and got a bit of money together to go to races that season. And yeah, I managed to do pretty well in my first season. I got third overall in the National Series, which qualified me to move up to the Pro Elite category for the 98 season. So at the end of the 97 season, when I was going to move up to the Pro Elite category for 98, I got a few calls again off UK teams. Towards the end of that season, I went to the Malvern's Classic, which was huge at the time. I think I ended up racing against Steve Peat in the semi-finals or something, and we had a really close race. And from there, I got quite a few offers to race for teams for the 98 season. I ended up choosing a team called Club Roost Rottweil, That was a fantastic little team. A guy called Kev Baines put that team together. At the time, the Rottweil bikes were really good. Paul Iddin was the importer for those bikes. I remember going to his house at the start of 98, picking up a frame and all the parts, and I actually went down to ride on bikes, even though I wasn't riding for them anymore. Craig built my bike up for me, and yeah, that bike was so cool. I thought at the time, there's no way you can get a better downhill bike than this. I did a race at the start of 98. I think I did a regional kind of downhill race. It was probably around February time at Nantmar Quarry. I think I got second there. And then a couple of weeks later, it was going to be the first national of the year. That year as well, it was sponsored by Toyota RAV4, and it was on Channel 4 TV, which, you know, was huge. The exposure that mountain biking was going to get, especially the downhill racing, was amazing. The first national was supposed to be at a place called Farleton Fell, and it got cancelled, and it got moved to Nantmar Quarry. And I managed to get second behind Steve Peat in my first ever elite national, which was, you know, amazing. You know, my race run was on Channel 4 on the TV, and that was the first time people sort of saw me and, you know, what I was capable of. I was a bit old to get into downhill racing, I guess. You know, I was like 25, 26 at that point, and all the other elite guys were, you know, very established at that point. Some of them had come from junior into elite, and others had been racing quite a long time, like, you know, Steve Peat, Rob Warner, Will Longdon, Tim Ponting, all those guys, Matt Farmer, they'd all been racing quite a long time. So luckily I was in the mix straight away. I think the combination of racing BMX as a kid and then doing a couple of seasons of motocross racing, you know, helped me. Anyway, that season, my goal was to go and race a downhill World Cup. Me and my mate Mike used to watch that on Eurosport and watch Petey and Warner and those guys racing. And it was just a huge goal for me to go and do a downhill World Cup. I managed to get out to Nevergal in Italy. Myself, Tom Edwards, Rich Warner and Chris Spencer all went out in Rich Warner's old van. Actually slept under a park bench at the side of the French motorway on the way to that race. Obviously we didn't have much budget, but we made it. We got to Nevergal. I think it took us about 2 days because Rich wouldn't drive over 50 mile an hour because he's the most sensible weirdo ever. But we got there, and I'd never rode a track like it in my life. It was so much fun. It was such a big change from the UK tracks that were a little bit tighter and a bit more pedally. You know, this track was wide open, flat out, and I absolutely loved it. Managed to qualify 17th, which was crazy because when I finished my qualifying run, I landed off the final jump into the finish arena, and my bottom bracket snapped and my cranks flew off. So me and my teammate Aidan Bishop were trying to fix my bike while Steve Gill went off to check the qualifying results. He came back and said, "Oh, I'm sorry mate, you've not qualified." So I was a bit disappointed, but I thought, oh well, first World Cup. Anyway, what he didn't do was check the first page, and I'd actually qualified 17th, so I was on the first page. We rushed to try and get my bike fixed. I was useless at working on mountain bikes then. Aidan Bishop got my cranks back on, but we kind of bodged it. And I got myself up to the top of the hill with Rich Warner, who'd also qualified. Steve Gill had qualified. So we were buzzing. I watched them guys go off out the gate. They were, you know, a bit off before I was in the final. And it was just chucking it down with rain. I didn't even have a coat or an umbrella. I was sat up amongst all the big name top pros like, you know, Steve Peat, Palmer, John Tomac. They all had, you know, turbo trainers warming up and mechanics and jackets and umbrellas, and I was absolutely freezing. But anyway, I set off on my race run, super confident, thought I'm just going to give it everything, and I had a huge crash at the top part of the track. And it turns out my bottom, at the second part of that race run was really fast. There's a website nowadays called rootsandrain.com, and you can check out all your results from back in the day. And I had the second fastest split in the whole of the elite category at that race, which was really, really cool to look back at. I think I was so angry from a crash at the top, I just kept it lit at the bottom and had the second fastest split, which was amazing. Anyway, that season went well. I got some other good results in the national rounds. I didn't get to go to too many more World Cups that season, but I ended up finishing second in the national series behind Steve Peat. I changed teams at the end of that year. I ended up riding for a team called Intense Kawasaki, which Chris Porter from Mojo, who was the Intense importer at the time, and a friend of his put this team together, and I rode for that team going into the 99 season, where I was going to get a little bit of a salary. I think he was supposed to get about $6,000 for the season, some expenses to do the European World Cups, and obviously the National Series, and that was the start of a long-term relationship with Intense Cycles. So our bikes that year were so cool. They were Intense M1s that were all painted green and in Kawasaki colours. We had Troily Designs kit, all green and black, Troily helmets, and I was sponsored by Vans that year. I always rode flat pedals, and I looked super cool. And the season started off alright. I got 26th or 27th or something at the first World Cup of Leger, and then I actually got a bad foot injury, pissed up after the race. It was in Maribor. We went to Maribor the week after Leger, and while I was racing Duel in on the Saturday evening, we were in an old motocross truck that we were sleeping in, and we travelled out in. It was me, Steve Giel, Chico Hook and Anthony Revel. The thing was an absolute roach, and while me and Steve Gill were racing Duel on the Saturday night, someone broke into the van and nicked all our bikes. So got back from racing the Duel and realised that I had no downhill bike for the next day's racing. So obviously I was off to the police station trying to make a report in Slovenia. That took all night. I got to bed really late, and then in the morning, Lewis King lent me his spare giant frame, which was really good of him. Tim Flukes at Rock Shocks got me some forks, and a bunch of other people helped me get the bike together. I managed one practice run on it, and the chain came off. In town, got bladdered. I think Warner and Petey sent me down the high street on a big plastic bin, which didn't end too well. I think I hit some bollards, flew off the bin, landed and rolled my ankle, and it turns out I tore some ligaments in my ankle, and had to miss the next World Cup, which was Nevergal, which I was absolutely gutted about, because you know I'd had great success there and speed the year before, and I thought with the Intense M1 I had now, I was definitely on for a good result. But yeah, shit happens, and I had to miss out on that race and come home and sit out for a month or two while my ankle healed up. Anyway, ended up finishing that season pretty decent, got some other good results. I stayed riding for Intense Bicycles right through to the end of my racing career. I had some other good results over the next few years, some good national results. Started sort of clawing my way up the World Cup results. I got 14th at a World Cup in France, in Vars. I think I was 15th at that same track in the European Championships. Then I managed to get an 11th place at a track called Lausanne, which was, other than Nevergal, that was my favourite World Cup track that I raced back in the day. And then 2002 season, the World Cup came to Fort William for the first ever time. I managed to come 10th at the first World Cup that season, which was, I was the highest place rider from the UK that year. So that season started off really well. The week after, I got another top 20 at Maribor. So I was in the top 13, I think, in the World Cup. And then I went over to America to race in Nauba. And at the time, the dual had changed over to four cross at the World Cup level. And at American races, they called it mountain cross. And it was, they kind of had some bigger jumps and made the tracks a bit gnarlier. And anyway, I had a bad crash in practice at that race and actually ripped my foot right off my leg, which was, you know, a massive disappointment to me because I was doing so well in the World Cup downhill at the time. And then, you know, I really didn't need to be racing four cross, but I just loved racing dual, four cross, downhill, anything there was. I always had a go at racing it. Anyway, that injury was really bad. They nearly took my foot off because my foot was hanging off just by a bit of skin. I was at a place called Wisconsin in America, and luckily a surgeon drove out to the hospital and did a really complicated operation and sewed my foot back on. Luckily, I've still got my foot today, but it's never been the same since that day. That was kind of the end of my racing career. I had to take the rest of that year off, obviously, for my foot to heal. But I decided I was going to give it another go racing the year after. I still was riding intense bikes, but I signed for the dirt intense race team, which again, we looked super cool. Mike Rose put together a really good program there. We had intense bikes all painted blue, and we had Trolley Designs kit to match the bikes with the dirt logos on. Yeah, we looked super trick, but a couple of weeks before the season started, unfortunately, my dad had a big heart attack. I was in Australia at the time, staying at a friend's, Michael Ronning's, house and with Steve Pete. And I flew straight home the next day, looked after my dad for the next month. Unfortunately, his heart was so damaged after the heart attack, he passed away. And that was a massive blow for me. I guess looking back, you know, my dad was the only person that really cared about my racing. Obviously my mum always supported me, but you know, it was my dad that I'd ring up every week after the race to tell him how I'd done. And he was always ringing me and asking me how I was getting on throughout the weekend and following my racing, and always making parts for my bike when I'd go home. And after my dad passed away, I tried to race, but I had no drive anymore. It was like, didn't realize at the time, but it was like I was racing, but I wasn't racing for anyone anymore, you know. And then I was starting to think, you know, what's the point in taking all these risks racing, and there's no one to tell or to celebrate it with at the end of the day. And so I carried on trying to race the rest of that year because, you know, I had obligations with the team, and you know, I felt like I needed to get some results for them. And you know, what else was I going to do, really? I started to get a few better results later on that season. I think I got third at a national round and was getting a couple of top 30s at World Cup, but not where I was before I had my accident and my dad died. And anyway, I carried on trying to race for a couple more years. Other than racing, I was doing a lot of mountain bike coaching for people. I was going out, staying at Morzine in between races, so taking people riding who were on holiday and helping them with their skills and getting down the hills. Really enjoyed that stuff. And then at the end of 2004, an old injury that I sustained, I didn't realise, but I had a blown out disc in my back, and that came back really bad. I got really bad sciatica to the point where I couldn't even walk or couldn't actually get up off the floor. I ended up getting home from a race and going to hospital and got an injection in my spine to try and calm it down. And then that, and I'd had another bad injury. I broke my wrist really badly and had to have some wires put in my wrist and stuff. And yeah, I just kind of started becoming not as enjoyable, and I decided to stop racing down. While I was recovering from the back injury, I went out to watch the BMX World Championships in Holland. Few of my mates from, I used to race BMX as a kid, they were still racing, and I went out to watch them. Absolutely had the best time ever, and decided I wanted to give BMX racing a go the year after. So after that BMX race I went and watched in Holland, I decided to get a BMX bike. And when I got home, I got an S&M Cruiser built up and an S&M 20 inch, and I started going to the BMX track every weekend. We used to go to Sheffield Indoor on a Thursday night, and I think that winter I did a race in France. A few of the guys that were racing BMX went with them to race at Saint-Étienne in France. They have like an international race in the winter. I managed to get third on Cruiser, which was pretty cool, good result. And so decided to give BMX racing a go in 2005. I was still doing my mountain bike coaching and going out to Europe doing that stuff, but I did a full season of BMX racing where actually went pretty well, riding flat pedals. At that time, you know, a lot of people are clipped in, and I managed to get sponsored by DC. So I was on DC shoes, DC jersey, and I look pretty cool. It was a bit of a different look than what everyone else was running, but I didn't race pro BMX. I wasn't fast enough for that. I raced down in 20 inch, I raced 19 and over expert, managed to win the national series and the British championships that year on 20 inch. And in the cruiser class, I got European number 3, which I was pretty happy about as well. After that season, you know, I had a pretty successful season racing the BMX and absolutely loved it. It was one of the best years I've ever had, to be honest. Just the banter we had at the BMX races with the guys and going racing in Europe, and yeah, it was absolutely amazing. Loved every minute of that year. The only thing was, I was not going to be making any money racing BMX, so I started to think, you know, what's the next thing I should be doing. I was still doing mountain bike coaching, and that was going pretty well. Still love riding my mountain bike, love riding the BMX. Also at the time, I was still working closely with Intense. I was going out to California quite a lot, riding out there and helping Jeff Stieber with a few bike ideas. And we ended up really proud of this bike. Jeff asked me one time, you know, what would be my ideal bike to go race at Sea Otter and around the, you know, California. And at the time, I was like, well, I kind of want a bike that's got the same angles as my downhill bike, but I want to be able to pedal it a bit easier and a bit less travel. So we came up with the Intense SS, it was called, which is basically an enduro bike of today. Obviously, there were 26-inch wheels, but I think the bike had about a 65 degree head angle. You know, you could put cross-country gears on the bike. And yeah, I was testing that bike a lot up at a place called Idlewild, which is a big long downhill run that's not super steep, but the bike was fantastic for there. And yeah, I was really proud of that bike, and as I say now, it's pretty much what an enduro bike is of today. So we were kind of ahead of the time on that bike. So I was thinking, what am I going to do next? And I decided I wanted to try and put a race team together. I still love racing, watched every single World Cup, I got to as many races possible to watch and rode as much as I could. And Jeff Stieber said to me at the time, well, we've already got a World Cup race program, which was the MS Intense team at the time. So, you know, Intense couldn't fund another race team. But he said, if you can get some sponsors, then I can supply you with the bikes. So I started looking into that. In 2007, ended up going to the Masters World Championships in France, which I managed to win that race. And I won that race on an Intense SOCOM, which was kind of like the bike down, the full downhill bike. But it was a great bike for me just to, you know, do downhill runs on, because I wasn't racing competitively. And that's where I met Michael Cowan, who from Chain Reaction Cycles, who was also at that race with a few of the Irish boys that I knew from racing, like Glenn O'Brien and those guys. Anyway, got talking to Michael, and a couple of months later, I flew over to Chain Reaction Cycles offices in Ireland, basically with a sheet of A4 paper that I'd scribbled some notes on running a World Cup race team. It turns out the meeting was with Michael and Chris Watson, who was the owner of CRC. And I'm sat opposite them with this single sheet of A4 paper. They must have thought, what the hell is going on here? Anyway, I gave them the idea of me running a World Cup race program for them using Intense bikes. I had Chris Kovarik, who was a huge name at the time, intense rider, lined up to ride for the team. My friend that's sadly passed away a few years ago, Dave Garland, as our head mechanic. And yeah, they loved the idea, and they said, yeah, let's go for it. So I flew back home, and I was like, wow, this is it. Now I'm going to have to step up to my words and put this thing together. So I worked flat out at home on this. Unfortunately, at the time, it was super stressful because my mum had developed Alzheimer's. So I'd moved my mum into my house. I was trying to look after her with carers and put this race program together, and it was super challenging, but managed to get it together. And you know, Dave Garland helped me out tons putting that team together, and we went into the 2008 season raring to go with a great lineup of riders and sponsors. We had Intent Cycles, Manitou Suspension, we had Chris Kovarik, Julian Camelini, a super fast young French rider. We had Rory Cunningham from Scotland, who was current junior world champion, just moving into the elite category, and Matt Simmons, another really fast UK rider. So the first World Cup in 2008, we went out there. We had the Intenses all painted blue to match the CRC colours, and the first World Cup went amazing. My friend from back home, Mark Cordell, come out helping us with mechanics as well. Julian ended up coming second to Sam Hill. I think Chris was seventh, so we had two riders in the top 10, and Rory and Matt Simmons were both in the top 30, I think. So couldn't have had much of a better start to the race season for the team. Anyway, the team went on from there, and we had some great success over the next few years. We had another World Cup podium. Chris got fifth in Canberra, I think. And we had three great seasons riding with the Intense bikes and the same team. We had some amazing results. I think Rory got a top 10 in Champery. Matt Simmons had some great results. And then at the time, Chain Reaction Cycles were making components that we started using on our race bikes with the Nukeproof brand, which was an old 90s iconic brand from the States. And turns out Michael Cowan and Chris Watson had acquired that name, that, you know, the company had stopped making products, and they really liked the name from back in the day, having some cool parts that Nukeproof made. So Chain Reaction started using that name to make some components, you know, like pedals, handlebars, grips, saddles, that kind of stuff. And we started introducing those parts onto the race team bikes. And then the guys in the office there, Dale McMullen, who was one of the shop mechanics engineers, they were messing about with making an enduro frame that they wanted to race the Mega Avalanche on, which is the first bike of the iconic Nukeproof Mega. It turns out that bike was pretty similar to geometry and dimensions of the Intense SS that I'd done with Intense. And so I said at that point, to help the team and to help grow the Nukeproof brand, why don't we make a downhill bike that the race team could use? So they all agreed to that. And between myself, Brant Richards and Dale, we came out with the Nukeproof Scalp. We got a prototype made, and that came out to a race we were doing in France at the Mega Avalanche. They have a downhill race there, French Cup. I raced the Masters on that bike and managed to win the race, and I was pretty blown away at how well it rode. I was a bit nervous that it wouldn't be, you know, anywhere near as good as the Intense at the time, but turns out, you know, it looked a bit funky, that first bike, and a few bits were falling off and coming loose. But once we got it dialed in a bit more, and Dale did a lot more work on that bike, it became a really good bike. And so for the 2011 season, we decided that the team would change up, and we'd ride Nukeproof bikes. At that time, it was also time for a team change as well. We made a new team. We had Matti Laikkanen, Joe Smith, Matt Simmons stayed on the team, and we introduced Lewis Buchanan as well, a super fast young Scottish rider. That first year on the Nukeproof bikes, after swapping over from Intense, the goal that year was to develop the bike, try and grow the brand, and also try and get some good race results along the way, and it turned out that the bike was going well. All the riders really liked the bikes. Matti Laikkanen ended up with an eighth place at Val d'Isole, which is probably still to this day the roughest track on the World Cup circuit. So for us to get a top 10 World Cup result in the first year using our own design frame was an amazing achievement, and how much work everyone put into that project was super cool. Unfortunately, a few weeks after that race, Matti Laikkanen had a huge accident at a race in Scandinavia and really smashed his face up, and it was touch and go for him to actually live after that crash. They had to stab him in the neck so he could breathe. He was choking on his own blood. He had about 16 plates put in his face, and unfortunately that was I'd say the start of the end of Matty's career, which was a super shame because he was flying at the time and was such a good guy, and still to this day one of my best ever friends that I've met through biking. So that was a big hit for the team. But anyway, you know, we carried on racing the next year, and Matti came back racing, but again he was trying to push it after a big injury and got a few other niggling injuries here and there. We got some good results though on the bike, and then a couple of years later we brought out the Mark II Nukeproof downhill frame, which was called the Pulse. At that time, you know, Matt Simmons was getting some good results, Joe Smith was getting some great results as well. We decided that, you know, the bike was proven, and so we needed to get another high profile rider that we could hopefully hit the podium on. And that's when I started looking around at the end of the season to see who was available. Ended up chatting to Sam Hill, and Sam was riding for Specialized at the time. I knew his contract was up. I didn't think he'd be super interested in riding for our program, but he seemed quite keen, and he said he liked the look of the team and the bike. And so that off season I ended up speaking to him again, and he said, could you send me a bike out to try? So I realized we didn't have any other spare frames, so I stripped my bike, got it shipped out to Australia, and Sam took the bike for a ride and got in touch with me the next day and said the bike was brilliant. If we could get the budget together, he was happy to come and ride for us. And I think to this day that is still the most media, the biggest impact that the team has ever had, signing Sam Hill for the 2013 season. Obviously I was pretty nervous at that point. I'd done all this work and signed Sam, but I was then thinking, wow, we've got to step our game up for the race season. Anyway, we came into the race season, and Sam hadn't actually got on the podium for a few years. He'd had a few injuries here and there whilst riding for Specialized, but you know, Sam had got those amazing iconic results when he, you know, rode for Iron Horse a few years previous. And yeah, he started going really fast on the bike. It was great having him on the team. We learned a lot from him. I think he quite liked the team vibe, and he ended up getting on the podium in the first year for us. And then that led us into the second year, 2014 season, and that's when we also signed young Mike Jones from Wales onto the program. He was a fast Welsh ripper, and him and Sam got on really well. Team dynamics for them two gelled really good. Sam was flying, Mike was up following him down every run, and those guys were hauling, as well as Joe Smith was flying as well. Sam ended up getting second at the Fort William World Cup, just narrowly missing out on a win. And then later on that season, I think Sam got second at Fort William, and Joe Smith might have been seventh. So amazing results for the team. And then later on that season, we went to Mont St Anne, obviously a really iconic place for downhill World Cup. And Sam had won the World Championships there for Specialized a number of years ago. And Sam managed to win that race, and that was our first ever, you know, team World Cup win, which was absolutely unbelievable. Amazing for Sam, amazing for the team, and just next level for Nukeproof. It proper put us on the map there, that, you know, we had a World Cup winning bike, and that just elevated the brand through the roof. And then a few weeks later, Sam won the World Cup finals again at Mirabel, and we had such a big party that evening. It was phenomenal. The CRC events team come out, put on a big barbecue, a big DJ set at the bottom of the racetrack, and that was a day I'll never forget. I was so proud of the team and Sam and just everybody involved that day. And then we actually went out to the World Championships in Norway. Sam was absolutely flying, obviously won that World Cup final, and we went out to Norway as a team. There was only Sam racing that race. Joe and Mike Smith didn't make the GB squad that year, but for some reason, I'm not sure why, Mike didn't make it, because he'd had numerous top 10s that season and he was obviously a young up and coming racer. But we all went out as a team, both Joe Smith, Mike Jones and myself. We walked up and down that Norway track so many times while Sam was practicing, with timing him on sections, you know, pointing out any parts of the track where anyone was maybe going slightly faster. Anyway, come to the race run and Sam was absolutely flying. Turns out, coming into the last split, he was 3.5 seconds up on everyone's time. He was even 2.5 seconds up on Josh Briceland's time. You know, the famous run where Josh broke his foot at the finish line just before the finish. But yeah, unfortunately, Sam went over the bars in that last rock garden, scorpioned his back in half. It turns out he actually cracked a vertebrae in that crash. But that was one of the hardest races for me to date with the team. You know, Sam was going to win the World Championships for us on the Nukeproof bike for the Chain Reaction Cycles Nukeproof team. And unfortunately, crash ended that dream. I think me and Sam were in tears at the end of that race. You know, racing is hard and that's how it goes. So we knew Sam was flying. Mike Jones was flying. Joe Smith was flying also. And we were really positive about going into the 2015 season. And we had another bike on the way, a new Pulse version, a lighter version, an updated version, and everyone was excited about that bike. Unfortunately, the week before the first World Cup, which was in Lourdes in 2015, Sam had a crash on one of his home tracks at home, just washed the front wheel out on a fire road and smashed his shoulder into a rock, ripped all the ligaments and wasn't able to race the start of that season. It started out good for us anyway. Mike Jones was third at the first World Cup in Lourdes, which was unbelievable for the team and for Mike. And then, you know, at the following races, Mike was qualifying second and third, and but just wasn't able to piece it together in the final, just kept trying to push too hard and crashing. And then the end of that season, Sam came back probably a bit prematurely after a shoulder surgery and tried to race, but just didn't have the pace that he had the previous year and just didn't gel with the new bike for whatever reason. But anyway, I went out to Eurobike later on that season to talk to sponsors for the following season, and ended up speaking to Mavic about stepping up our sponsorship with the race team. They explained to me that they were going to do a big push with Enduro racing, because Enduro was on the up. The Enduro World Series was growing with media and spectators and everything else. The racing looked really fun. I was following that, you know, watching the races online and stuff. And so I decided to do a deal with Mavic where we would go and do 4 Enduro World Series rounds that didn't clash with the World Cups for the 2016 season. So I told all the riders that's what we were going to do. I thought they were all going to moan at me and say they weren't going racing Enduro, because to downhill riders, it was still a little bit, you don't go and race Enduro, there's too much pedaling. Anyway, we went to the first race in Europe, which was in Ireland. Chain Reaction Cycles were actually a sponsor of that race, so it fitted in really good for us. And, you know, there was so many staff members from CRC there, they had a big setup. We turned up with the race team, parked next to them guys, and Sam ended up coming second in the race. I think Joe Smith was top 10 as well. So it was, you know, again, an unbelievable start to having a go at the Enduro World Series racing. And Sam actually loved the race format. The tracks were a bit more natural and, you know, than the World Cup race tracks were starting to become. And the World Cup race tracks were starting to become a bit just flat out faster, not quite as technical, I guess, which is not the type of riding that Sam prefers. You know, he likes it really technical and really difficult. And so whether this was just a new challenge, but he loved the enduro racing. Obviously, it was a really good push for the Nukeproof Mega, which was the biggest selling bike for Nukeproof. You know, most people buy an enduro bike, not a downhill bike. So that's where your sales are. And so the marketing for the race team doing that well, especially with Sam Hill, was phenomenal. So anyway, carried on racing that season. Sam ended up winning a World Cup, an Enduro World Cup round in France, where he had an epic battle with 10 times downhill world champion Nicolas Vuillot, who was the man at the time in the Enduro, along with Richie Rude and a few other guys like that. And so we decided for the 2017 season that we were going to focus on enduro rather than downhill with the race team. At the time, we'd introduced Elliot Heap onto the team, a young rider from where I used to live, near Wigan. And Elliot had actually finished third overall in the downhill World Cup, which was a phenomenal result for him. But he was also pretty good at enduro, because he'd actually started enduro racing before I got him racing downhill for the team. So we had to make a decision on, you know, which riders we were choosing for racing enduro. Mike Jones decided he didn't want to race enduro, he wanted to stick with downhill. So unfortunately, we had to say goodbye to Mike. Mike was, you know, an amazing rider on the team, and I loved having Mike as part of the team. He was like part of our family. But anyway, we decided to go enduro racing, and in the first year of doing the full Enduro World Series, Sam won the overall title, which was, you know, again, next level. And then he won the 2018 title as well. Elliot won the under 21 2018 world title, and then Sam backed up his third world title in 2019. So we had four enduro world titles, which was just phenomenal. And you know, I couldn't have thought we'd ever get that much success with the race team, but yeah, it was amazing. Super proud of the guys, super proud of everyone on the team, and you know, the guys at Nukeproof, you know. And at that point, I think Nukeproof was put on the map as one of the best bike brands in the world, which came around pretty quickly. And yeah, just a phenomenal story, really. So as we say, good things can't last forever. And that was the case for us after those three amazing years of success, with Sam winning three world titles, Elliot winning a world title. And we went into the 2020 season ready to go again. We had a SRAM team camp in the south of France, and every time we have a team test camp with SRAM, we've always had great success the following year. I don't know whether it's just, you know, the riders are, you know, excited that they're getting the bike set up by the guys at SRAM, and the suspension's all dialed, so when you go into the first race, you know, you've got no questions. Anyway, Sam was absolutely flying at that team camp and looked super fit and psyched for the season. But then we got home from that team camp and COVID hit, which completely changed all the, you know, the plans for the year. All the races started getting cancelled. Sam was at home still training, but not knowing when his first race was going to be. So I think he started to lose a bit of drive. Turned out, you know, COVID carried on for that whole summer. All the races got cancelled, and the Enduro World Series decided, once we were allowed to travel, we're going to do three races in Europe at the end of that summer. So we decided, you know, with how hard it was for Sam to travel from Australia, that we were just going to, you know, not bother bringing him over, and we were just going to go and do the races with the European riders. Unfortunately, Keelan had a crash that early on in that season. That year, and injured his shoulder badly, so he had to have a surgery on his shoulder, so that was him out for the year. So in the end, it was just myself, Elliot Heap, my friend Matt Stock came mechanicking for us, and a rider that we were helping out, Ant Hale. We went out to do the three rounds of the Enduro World Series. That it wasn't going to be an overall title, so it wasn't like Sam was going to lose his title or anything like that. Anyway, we had a great time on that trip. It was so fun, with just the few of us in the race van, and The first race was in Switzerland, and the weather was absolutely horrendous. It was snowing and sleeting and windy. Ended up just being a two-stage race. I think Elliot did really well. I think he finished seventh. I actually managed to win the Masters category, which was a great achievement for myself. Ant did well as well. And then we went off to Finale for 2 weeks of razzing mopeds round, just training, doing runs on the bikes on the great trails in Finale, because the next two races were going to be in Pietra Ligure and Finale Ligure. We couldn't go back home because of the COVID restrictions and quarantine rules. So yeah, that was a great trip. We ended up with another couple of good results at those races. And that was the end of the 2020 season, which led us into the following year, where there was going to be the COVID sort of started going away a little bit. We were going to have a full season of ESO racing in 21. It was all going to be in Europe, just because some countries were a little bit more, had more restrictions than Europe did. And so Sam came over for that season, and we had Elliot Heap and Keelan. We had a solid team for that season, but Sam had just somehow lost his mojo. I think it was, you know, a full year at home. First time he'd been at home since being about 16, missing a whole race season. He seemed to have lost his fitness. He didn't have the same drive and motivation that he had before. And I think he was struggling with it all mentally. And so we started off the year, Elliot had a great result, Keelan had a decent result, and Sam somehow managed to second place on the first stage, which blew my mind, because I just didn't think he was fit enough to race at that highest, you know, intensity on the enduro races. And after that second place, it just didn't go to plan. He started to, you know, get worse results, and I think the results weren't coming. You know, he was getting the worst results he'd ever had in enduro. I think a combination of that, plus his fitness, plus maybe missing being at home, because he was used to being at home more, just all accumulated. And it was a tough year. Sam just looked like he was sad. He didn't want to be there. You know, I don't like Sam being like that. I was trying to manage, you know, how Sam was feeling, but also keep the other guys motivated, because, you know, they were on the up. Elliot was getting some great results. Keelan was getting some good results. But that was probably one of the toughest years to date for the race team for me, you know, being able to manage all of that. I was, you know, struggling with it. Sam, as I say, Sam seemed really down and sad, and, you know, it was tough. Anyway, after that season, that took us into the 23 season, and we decided to change things up a bit. We decided to, you know, Newproof Bikes was going really well. The brand was on the up. You know, a huge thank you to, you know, Sam and the team. You know, Sam's results on the Newproof Bikes have definitely elevated the company to where it was. The guys back in the office and the workshop, you know, working on new designs and making the bikes, you know, look as good as any of the other expensive brands out there. We're in a good place with Newproof, and we decided to change the team up and call it the Newproof SRAM Factory Race Team. You know, SRAM had been a long-term sponsor for all the SRAM components and the RockShox suspension. You know, the bikes were working phenomenal. I think we had the best bike on the circuit. So we changed the team name, the team look, and we also brought on a few new riders to the program. We had a young rider that Sam had spotted in Australia called Dan Booker from Tasmania. And we introduced Louise Ferguson onto the team that was riding Newproof bikes, and also young Corey Watson that was riding Newproof bikes for Hotlines. So we had a big roster, but we were going to do a few different events that year. We were going to still do the full Enduro World Series, but Louise and Dan were going to mix it up with doing some downhilling as well. It turns out, the first race of the season, Dan Booker was a dab hand at Enduro. And at the first round in the Tweed Valley, Dan came fifth. Elliot came sixth. Elliot, just the pressure got to him that home race. He had three crashes on three different stages. I think he would have definitely been on the podium, if not better, that race. But, you know, unfortunately the pressure got to him and ended up sixth. But fifth place for Dan was a phenomenal start to the season. Sam ended up doing a e-bike race along with myself, and Sam came third in the e-bike race, which was amazing. And it was a great, we had a great season, some fantastic results. Louise Ferguson decided she wanted to race downhill for the year after, as well as doing Crankworx events. And then Dan wanted to concentrate on enduro after the success he'd had in the enduro races. So the 23 season, the Enduro World Series became the Enduro World Cup, and there was going to be some races overseas, starting off in Tasmania for the first two rounds. So we Louise left the team and went to ride for the Nukeproof Continental Downhill team. Dan Booker came fully onto our Nukeproof SRAM Factory Race Program, and Sam decided he wanted to have a go at downhill racing again. He just didn't get the drive back for wanting to do the full Enduro World Series, even though at the end of the 22 season he'd started to get his pace back and his love for racing again. You know, he was fifth overall coming into the last couple of stages at the last round. Unfortunately, got a front puncher and blew his front wheel up, which ended that. But he decided he wanted to do downhill. So we only got quite a small program on the team, but a small group of people that worked for the team. But JC and Sam started to work on you know, a downhill program for the 23 season. But unfortunately, Sam injured himself again, and he went over at the end of the previous season to race the Cairns downhill, and by all accounts he was absolutely flying at that race. He was messaging me saying things were going great, he loved the bike, the new carbon descent, and everything was going well. He was riding really fast. Unfortunately, just had a little come around a corner, and a vine on a tree caught his front brake lever, flipped him over the bars. He flew through the air backwards and hit a tree and dislocated his shoulder badly and torn all the ligaments. So that was him back off for another surgery to fix his shoulder, and the whole off season out of action again, which was, you know, not the start we wanted for the start of his downhill season. Anyway, come over for the national downhill round in Fort William, which a lot of teams and pro riders come over for. It's like a mini World Cup, and that was pretty much the first time back on the downhill bike, where obviously he wasn't up to pace. He was getting the feel of the bike. We stayed there for a few extra days. JC was working non-stop on the bike, trying different things, trying to get the bike set up as good as possible for Sam. And I think we got to a good point at that weekend. And then Sam was back off to Australia for a couple of months training before the World Cup downhill season started. For the Enduro boys, we had an amazing start to that, to the year. As I say, the first two races were in Tasmania. We went out to Medina for the first time, which is an absolutely amazing bike park. A bike park that Dan Booker worked at as a younger guy, building trails there. Yeah, the race was amazing. I think that was probably the best Enduro World Cup race I've ever been to, with the tracks they had there, the amount of fans that came up to watch the race. I mean, the Aussie fans are next level. They had a DJ in the middle of the stages. They had signs with Dan Booker on. It was phenomenal, and obviously there's a lot of pressure on Dan for that home race. He managed to back it up by won a couple of stages and narrowly missed out on the win there, but you know, came second place, and that was such a good start. And after a couple of difficult seasons, it was a big relief for me with the team. You know, we'd gone from winning world titles to not even being on the podium, and so Dan putting us back on the podium was absolutely fantastic, and super proud of Dan that weekend. Unfortunately, Elliot hurt his shoulder quite badly, which kind of ruined the whole season for him. He had a niggling shoulder injury for the rest of that season. But Corey Watson had a great result at the first round, and Keelan had some great results as well. And that season went really well for the Enduro boys. Dan got another few top five results and ended up seventh overall, literally missing out by fifth overall by about 0.02 of a second, I believe, at the last race, which would have put him two places up, would have put him from fifth to third on the podium, and that podium position would have given him enough points for fifth overall, but he still ended up seventh, which was a fantastic result for him. Unfortunately, it didn't go as well for Sam. Sam went into the first World Cup just not prepared enough. He wasn't up to speed enough, but it was all going to be a learning curve at each race. Just getting used to the bike, getting used to that World Cup pace again, getting fitter and faster at each race. The first World Cup, he didn't qualify. Then the week after, he managed to qualify, which was a huge, you know, turnaround and result for us. With the UCI World Cup going from 80 people qualifying down to 60, it was, you know, just qualifying was really hard. Sam managed to qualify at the second round. He didn't make the top 30 in the final, but it was a huge step forward. You know, we went from there with a positive outlook that hopefully by the end of the season, Sam was going to be at a pace where he could be qualifying and getting the results that he wanted and we all wanted for him. And unfortunately, Sam and JC decided to go out to Crankworx to do an extra race just to get the racing speed there week in, week out. And he had a slide out in practice and hurt his foot. He rang me up and said, you know, he wasn't going to be able to race that race. I was at an enduro race with the enduro guys. And so I told him to, you know, go and get it checked out in the hospital. Went to the hospital, had an x-ray, and turned out he'd smashed a load of bones in his foot and he was going to need a surgery to repair that. So that was just another huge blow for Sam and, you know, his head and, you know, where he was at with results and where he wanted to be. It was just another step backwards. So that was the end of the race season for Sam, unfortunately. He went back off to Australia, got his foot fixed in surgery, but it was going to be a long-winded recovery from that injury. As I said, we had a great season with the enduro guys, you know, other than Elliot, who had his shoulder injury. Corey Watson had some really promising results, as did Keelan. And then, you know, I started to put the team together for the 24 season. At the end of each season is a time where you're speaking to all your sponsors and trying to get the money side of things dialed in and make a plan for the following season. And I'd been waiting all season also to go and have a shoulder surgery. So I went in for a shoulder surgery in the October after I'd got most of the sponsors all dialed in, where I actually had to have 7 anchors put in my shoulder to repair my rotator cuff that's been damaged for years. And the day after that, I got the call off my boss saying the whole company had gone into administration, which was, you know, a massive, massive blow for us all. I had all the following season planned, all the sponsors on board, all the races we were going to do. We even had, you know, designs had been done at that point for the bikes and the team kit and everything. Yeah, it was all put on hold. But I was told I needed to tell all the riders that the contracts were not going to be, the contracts were all void from this point on, so any contracts that the team riders had, who are all contractors, those contracts were basically going to have to be torn up and start again once the company got a new investor. So that was a huge blow for all of us, and a really challenging time waiting around and seeing what we were going to be able to do. I started budgeting for a much lower budget race program for 24. Quite a few of the sponsors that had been hanging on to know what we were going to do started to pull out because, you know, they have to, you know, use their budgets wisely. And if they were unsure if we were going to be able to have a race team or not, they needed to go elsewhere, and totally understand that. Then just last month, we got the really bad news that there was no investors found for the company, and it was the end of Chain Reaction Cycles and Nuke Proof and everything else. And so at this point now, I'm out of a job, out of a race team. All the riders have had to go and look for teams and sponsors elsewhere, and it's a really weird time and a really difficult time for me after running a race program for Chain Reaction Cycles and Nuke Proof for 16 years. to be told my job's terminated and I don't even get redundancy. So it's been tough, but here we are. I've decided to start a podcast. I'm really excited about that, and I'm actually working on a really cool program behind the scenes that I'm hoping is gonna come together. So maybe in the next podcast, when I'm interviewing someone else and not boring you guys all to death talking about myself, I'll have some exciting news to share, and fingers crossed. But I'd like to say a massive thank you for listening. I'm excited about the Stay On Your Bike podcast. Can't wait to interview some legends of the sport soon, and keep tuned.